Prolonged eye contact can be aggressive, affectionate, or deceptive. That is why we have anthropologists like Ray Birdwistell, or we have Paul Ekman, who's a psychologist, who probably linked emotions with facial expressions. And when we talk of Ray Birdwistell, he ideally focused on eye contact. So these people have ideally focused on doing research as to what is the importance of eye contact, how effective it can be, what are the repercussions or consequences as far as eye contact is concerned. That is why this kind of a sentence, that prolonged eye contact. I may not realize, but prolonged eye contact can make the other person feel I'm far too aggressive. So we as humans need to constantly be aware and alert as far as the facial expressions are concerned. Following with the eyes. Eyes follow movement naturally. If a person is interested in someone, then their eyes will follow that person naturally. Squinting. Squinting of the eyes may mean a person is trying to obtain a closer look. When I say squinting, ideally it means to look with the eyes partly closed. For example, when you're facing the sun, your eyes may be partly closed, or like you're blinking in the sun. It may also mean that a person is considering whether something is true or not. Liars may use squinting as a tool to keep others from detecting their dishonesty. It is said that if a person lies, it is specially visible in the eyes of that individual. So that is why probably we are saying here that liars often use squinting as a tool. So the other person or the opposite person may not realize that he or she is lying and has malintentions. Of course, squinting may just be a result of the bright sun. We can give that benefit of doubt that it is extremely hot and it's a sunny day, so due to which you are squinting. Blinking. Blinking is a natural response that can occur for no other reason than having dry eyes. It can also be a result of the person feeling greater levels of stress. Stress ideally creates an emotion in our body. That emotion can lead to immediate changes in the facial expression. And thus, it can lead to a lot more blinking. Now, blinking ideally can happen at such a level that you, if you're stressed, you may not even be aware or not even realize that you're blinking far too often. Rapid blinking can indicate arrogance. Now, when we say rapid blinking, it is different from blinking far too often. Rapid blinking, that means it is going at a faster pace. It indicates arrogance, while reduced blinking can move towards a stare. Because the moment I reduce my blinking, it is as good as a stare. Winking. It can indicate that two people understand something without using words. Winking ideally is the eyelid which is closed, one eyelid which is closed. Winking can also be due to various reasons. For example, you want to make a mockery of somebody, so you wink. For example, you want to crack a joke, so possible that you wink. It can mean hello, or it can mean a sign of flirtation. Closing of eyes. Closing the eyes serves to shut out the world. It can be a reaction to fear. Very often when we are in fear, we don't have the ability to face the reality. So, out of fear, you can close your eyes. So, out of fear, you will close your eyes. Why does that happen? Because you're not able to actually experience what you're visualizing. Whatever you're visualizing, you're finding it difficult to cope and grasp. So, the first change will be closing of eyes. It can also be a reaction linked to embarrassment. Others may close their eyes as a way to think more sincerely about a particular subject. So when you close your eyes, you're in deep thought, you're thinking more sincerely, you're thinking more in depth about a particular subject. Eye moisture. Tears obviously indicate sadness, but moisture has a more practical purpose to wash and clean the eyes. Ideally, they say that if your tears, of course, indicate sadness, which they do, unless sometimes the eyes are also slightly wet due to happiness. You know, if there's extreme happiness, you could probably have tears of happiness. So in this case, they're saying moisture has a practical purpose to wash and clean the eyes. Damp eyes can be suppressed, crying, or an expression of extreme happiness or laughter. See, sometimes if a person has lost a close one, see, if a person has lost a loved one, then ideally the person may have damp eyes, which means the person could have probably cried for hours and hours and then stopped, but the eyes are yet damp. Or if a person is extremely happy, then the person will probably have tears of laughter. In many cultures, they're not expected to cry but may experience damp eyes in place of crying. Now, what are we talking of? We're talking of men in many cultures are not expected to cry but experience damp eyes in place of crying. Probably in many cultures, men are taught since childhood not to cry. So, it refrains the person from actually crying. So, it is said that they experience damp eyes. This could lead to more tears, but somewhere they ideally may stop. Pupil dilation. Pupil dilation may be harder to detect by most people. Sexual desire may be a cause of such dilation. It may also be an indication of attraction. Physiologically, eyes dilate when it is darker to let in more light. Rubbing of the eyes. Eyes may water, causing the person to rub their own eyes. This can happen when a person feels uncomfortable or tired. It may also happen when a person simply has nuts. It may also happen when a person simply has something in their eyes. While all nonverbal communication differs greatly among cultures, perhaps none is so obviously different than the movement and study of eye contact. Now, what is ideally being discussed? When we talk of all the cultures, people from all backgrounds, social, religious backgrounds, people with varied mindset, perceptions, ideas, views, what is most important? The study of eye contact. A particular nonverbal interaction between two individuals can have completely different meaning in different cultures. So, for example, in one of the cultures, For example, in one of the cultures, nodding your head in this manner would mean a no, but in another culture, it would mean a yes. So we need to understand that how every culture represents different aspects of the same thought process. That means most of the times we assume this to be a no, but how it is thought to be in some other culture. Even within the same culture, oculexics plays a tremendous role in obtaining meaning from other nonverbal cues. That is why even among the same culture, humans have trouble sometimes understanding each other because of varying eye behavior, nonverbal cues, culture and personal differences. no matter what culture you belong to. Each individual is different. Each individual has differences as far as eye contact is concerned. When I say has differences, that means their way of expressing eye contact may be different. Of course, a lot is dependent on the individual per se. That is why we are talking of personal differences. But when you actually discuss oculexics as a term, we need to understand we have trouble understanding our closest people due to differences in wearing eye behavior. So it is definitely not an easy task to always understand and assume what the other person thinks or feels. People can typically tell individuals who are angry from those who are nervous, from those who are confident by what they do with their eyes. That means the kind of emotion which is expressed, the kind of facial expressions which are observed. Each one gives a different cue or hint to the people or the person opposite. Furrowed brows or rolling of the eyes typically constitutes impatience, anger or defiance. I guess when we say furrowed brows, it is kind of a facial expression which reveals this kind of a feeling or thought process immediately. Looking down or batting the eyes typifies nervousness, while continuously looking at someone and simultaneously shutting the mouth signals compliance with non-confidence. Squarely looking someone in the eye connotes self-confidence. A person, a confident, engaging public speaker, instills confidence in his audience. How? Through his way of standing first and foremost, posture. Then having the ability to look at one and all throughout, while discussing, talking, giving ideas, views, explanation. That ability to hold the audience. That ability to create that kind of dynamic environment through gestures, postures, and especially eye contact. That ability to look at one and all and make each person feel that he or she is a part of this activity there today. Continuously looking down while speaking either on one-to-one or publicly. It shows a feeling of nervousness or lack of confidence. What is the purpose of looking down while you're talking? It is a complete mismatch in terms of verbal and non-verbal communication. The very fact that one cannot even face a larger audience, the very fact that one cannot even have eye contact with the people and look down continuously, that means there needs to be major changes in your thought process. There needs to be a lot of introspection to be done, and also how at the earliest can you change your behavior, especially your facial expressions. Notice how uncomfortable a person who will not make eye contact with you make you feel. Squarely looking someone in the eye connotes self-confidence. A confident, engaging public speaker instills confidence in his audience. Continuously looking down while speaking, either one-on-one or publicly, pervades a feeling of nervousness or a lack of confidence. Now, a person who's very confident will see to it that he or she has the ability to interact face to face effectively, has the ability to generate or create a dynamic environment which would make the public or the audience feel that the person is putting in all the effort to instill confidence in others. This can probably be in the manner or the way he conducts himself. This can probably be in a manner whereby he gives attention to one and all through eye contact all throughout while interacting or talking. This can also be because the individual has that kind of confidence in him as a public figure to portray himself effectively. Touching, haptics. What is haptics? It is a study of touching. Do you know or did you know that acceptable levels of touching vary from culture to culture? In Thailand, touching someone's head may be considered as rude. In many Spanish-speaking countries of Latin America, people greet each other with one kiss on the cheek. For example, in Argentina. In Spain, people greet each other with two kisses on the cheek. Now, these are various ways and means of probably expressing touch. These are ways and means of probably communicating. And to an extent, it is ideally considered or accepted and considered appropriate. But yes, very important that it differs from culture to culture. In Spain, people greet each other with two kisses on the cheek. In Colombia, shaking hands or verbal greeting is common and probably without hugging. Handshake is one of the most common form of touch. In Peru, when men greet one another, they usually do so shaking hands or with a verbal greeting. Otherwise, whenever a woman is involved, greeting involves kissing on the cheek or verbal greeting. In some cultures, for a woman, to shake hands with a man may not be appreciated. In some cultures, a namaste is appreciated than a touch in terms of handshake. So, we need to understand again that haptics, the study of touch, how does it differ in terms of various social and religious and cultural backgrounds? The importance of haptics in organizations. How does it have an impact on the people in the organization as far as haptics is concerned? We will now discuss in depth each of these aspects. Haptics. Haptics is the science of applying touch. It is derived from a Greek word haptikos, haptikos, which means to grasp or to perceive. Now, when we talk of haptics, which means ideally the science of applying touch, what are the points which we need to discuss? In the US, in the United States, the main form of greeting is shaking hands. Though when greeting friends, it is not uncommon for them to hug. Men can salute by shaking hands or demonstrate camaraderie by slapping one another's shoulders or backs. Now, this ideally form of touch is a more a friendly gesture. When we talk of patting the head, slapping someone's shoulder or the back, what does it ideally mean? It is a form of touch. Now, a lot depends on the purpose and the setting. That means where and with whom. When we talk of purpose, if it's in an organization, it differs from person to person. If it's a doctor ideally, then in the field of medicine, or the professional touch in terms of medical as a field. So it is extremely important as to who the person is, where is the situation taking place, and of course, a lot depends on the rapport too between the two people. In India, normally people greet with folded hands and urbanized men shake hands. Haptic communication is a form of non-verbal communication and the way by which people and other animals communicate via touching. So, today as far as non-verbal communication is concerned, haptics plays a very important role too. We will go ahead with the slides and discuss how. Touch or the haptic sense is extremely important for humans as well as providing information about surfaces and textures. Let's take, for example, a visually impaired person. For him or her, a lot of communication takes place via touch, because it is assumed that since they're visually impaired, touch is one of the most important aspects for them to actually figure out what is it in terms of understanding. It is a component of nonverbal communication, in interpersonal relationships, and vital in conveying physical intimacy. There are 6 different kinds of touch. Now let us discuss each one of these. The first one is positive. Say when you're distressed, a touch from a parent will definitely make you feel more relaxed. It is because of the situation that you're distressed, and a touch from a parent makes a difference because it is conveyed in a positive manner. That means, what do we mean by a negative touch, for example? A negative touch, ideally, would be a punch or a slap from an individual. Now, when I say a negative touch is a punch or a slap from an individual, it also means that the consequences or the repercussions would be, ideally, faced by the sender, because this kind of a touch may not be accepted or appreciated. The next one is playful. It is said, for example, human babies ideally find it difficult to survive if they don't go through that sense of touch from a mother. Chimpanzees have a highly developed sense of touch. So when we talk of playful, we need to understand that playful in forms of touch is a lot to do again with the purpose and the situation and the individual there. The next one is control. That is making an attempt to direct a person to behave in a certain way. That means somewhere you are having control in terms of what you expect another person to do. Ritualistic. When you talk of ritualistic, it ideally can be probably greeting, whereby you are expressing your acknowledging or expressing in terms of greeting a person, or you can probably say you're expressing in terms of, say, affection, whereby you are getting a bit more emotional. When we talk of task related, for example, a doctor, when a doctor has to examine a patient, so it gets related to the task, it's specific. And the last one is unintentional. It is actually not really done or made, sorry, it is actually put forward unintentionally. That means it happened by chance when we talk of the different kinds of touch. Touching can be both sexual, sometimes kissing is one such example, and platonic, such as hugging or tickling. Touch is the earliest sense to develop in the fetus. Touch is the earliest sense to develop in the fetus. The development of an infant's haptic senses and how it relates to the development of the other senses such as vision has been the target of much research. Hearing tends to fare much better. So as we just discussed even in the previous slides, it is said that even visually impaired children respond better to touch. So when we discuss haptics, we do understand how important it is in terms of non-verbal communication. What can be conveyed through a touch may not be easily conveyed through words. Striking, pushing, pulling, pinching, kicking, strangling, and hand-to-hand fighting are forms of touch in the context of physical abuse. This again is negative touch. In a sentence like, "I never touched him or her," "Don't you dare to touch him or her," The term touch may be meant as a euphemism for either physical abuse or sexual touching. When I say euphemism, it is an indirect statement put forward in a polite manner, which otherwise can be a very harsh statement. What do I mean by this? When you say, don't you dare touch him or her. Another way of saying this, don't touch him or her. So, a lot of aggression in the tone, a rude statement, a harsh statement. So, of course, a lot to do with the tone and words. Managers should know the effectiveness of using touch while communicating to subordinates, but need to be cautious and understand how touch can be misunderstood. While working with others and using touch to communicate, a manager needs to be aware of each person's touch tolerance. It is believed that a person in power is more likely to touch a subordinate, but the subordinate is not free to touch. Always remember, if a word or phrase is accompanied by a touch on the shoulder, it'll carry more weight. Now, we need to understand in organizations who ideally has the power to pat the shoulder, who ideally has the power to console a person. Generally, it'll be from top management to subordinates. When we talk of the power of touch, we ideally mean that a lot is in relation to the designation of the person. So we need to understand, especially when there's a rapport between superior and subordinate. It depends on the two individuals. It depends on what the discussion is all about. It depends how important it is for the subordinate at that juncture to feel probably consoled, or to probably made to be understood that he or she has put in a lot of effort and requires appreciation. So, when you talk of touch, that is why it is said a word of praise which is accompanied by a touch on the shoulder. It definitely makes the subordinate feel that he or she has probably achieved what was required and he or she ideally deserves this kind of praise. We now discuss use of time. This term is known as chronemics. The study of time in non-verbal communication is called chronemics. It is a study of the use of time in non-verbal communication, the way we perceive time, structure our time, and react to time is a powerful communication tool and helps set the stage for the communication process. Across cultures, time perception plays a large role in the non-verbal communication process. Time perceptions include punctuality, willingness to wait, and interactions. The use of time can affect lifestyle, daily agendas, speed of speech, movement, and how long people are willing to listen. Thus, we need to understand that time plays a very crucial role as far as nonverbal communication is concerned. The very fact that a person arrives prior to a meeting, prior to an interview, reflects on him or her. It shows that the person values time. It also shows that the person is respecting the time of another individual. When we talk of time, of course, culturally or in terms of culture, time plays a very crucial role. Punctuality is one of the most important aspects as far as time is concerned. As far as the Western culture is concerned, they do focus on punctuality as one of the most important aspects. When we talk of time, it also means the willingness to wait. Say, for example, if I have to wait for more than an hour to speak to my director, I assume I should have the patience and capacity to ideally wait, since I am a subordinate and I have no choice but to respect and value that the person whom I am waiting for is ideally, of course, having a very hectic schedule. The use of time can affect lifestyle and daily agenda. When we are talking of a day-to-day schedule, time is not less. It is time which is mismanagement which can create a problem. Very often it is said that people do not stick onto schedules, they do not plan well, but time management is one of the most important aspects. Time management is mind management. If your mind manages the time well, if your mind looks into the schedule, the agenda, and gives enough time to every detail, then ideally work can go on smoothly. When we talk of speed of speech, movement, how long people are willing to listen. See, if we have limited time and we have to convey key points to an audience, then even though we have 10 key points, we need to understand that if I only have time for 5 key points to be delivered to the audience, what is the agenda of the get-together? What do I need to convey to the audience at that juncture? And ideally, will those 5 points be put forward appropriately within the short span of time to the audience? That means it's about prioritizing. So whether it is tasks, or whether it is a speech, or whether it is information or planning of an activity, time plays a very crucial role. Now, time can also be used as an indicator of status. For example, the boss in most companies can interrupt progress to hold an impromptu meeting during the middle of the work. Yet the average worker would have to make an appointment to see the boss. So I guess it is understood that if there is a person who is at the top management, say a manager, a boss, a leader, ideally they can have a meeting at their beck and call. Whereas the subordinate would definitely have to take an appointment to discuss, talk, interact with the boss. The way different cultures perceive time can influence communication as well. That means if there is a lunch break, for example, only for 20 minutes, it means that you ideally need to finish your lunch within the 15 to 20 minutes and come right away for the meeting with your boss. For example, most Americans will schedule a meeting for a specific time such as 2:15 p.m. and expect all involved parties to be punctual at the specific or specified time. In many cultures in other countries, however, they may set a time to meet someone in the afternoon. And on many occasions, the schedule is broken, changed, or deadline unmet. Why is the schedule broken, changed, or unmet? Probably due to some other important or urgent meeting coming up, probably due to some changes in the schedule, probably due to delay from the person at top management.